Okay, I'm recording as well. Okay, before we start, I want to give a yashikaya to the Neisenfeld family. Jared came up with the idea of sponsoring the shiur. So the Neisenfeld family would like to sponsor this shiur. We came up with the number $180 to sponsor the shiur as a schus, just as an appreciation for the founders of the kollel. That's how he put it. So he wants to thank the whole community, anybody who's involved in the kollel, anybody who helped bring the kollel, help support the kollel, a yashar koach to everybody, and that's certainly a tremendous chizik for us here, that to feel appreciated. So again, yashar koach to everybody who's involved and helps to support the kollel, and yashar koach to the Neisenfeld family for leading the way, initiating this idea of sponsoring the shiur every week. So sponsorships are welcome, and people are welcome to sponsor this year for next time. Hi Sam, how are you? Okay, tonight's topic is Biyomo Titein Tscharo. It's paying workers on time. So we're going to follow the same standard format. We're going to go through the sugyas. I hope to touch on most of the basic halachas, but I also want to focus on the theme of the halacha and some of the lumdis, like we say, like learning in yeshiva, getting the sugya, trying to understand the yesoidis, trying to understand the fundamentals, what the nature of this mitzvah is. So we start off with the pasuk in Vayikra, in Parshas Kedoshim. It's actually in two places in the Torah, in Sefer Vayikra and Sefer Devarim. So first we have the pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, Vayikra Yotes, pasuk Yudgimel, Lo Sas Shreikes Reyacha, you're not allowed to steal. And the Gemara discusses exactly what type of stealing we're referring to. As Reyacha, your friend, Lo Sigzol, another kind of stealing. One case is when you deny outright. The other case is when you're pushing them off. Lo Talin Pu'ula Sochem Yitcha Ad Boiker. And this is the part of the pasuk we're focusing on. You're not allowed to withhold the wages, to let the wages go overnight to your worker. Just like when it comes to karbanis, it's very interesting that you're not allowed to let the meat, the sacrificial meat or the parts, go overnight past their expiration date. So it's almost like there's an expiration date. You have to pay by a certain time. You're not allowed to withhold and go overnight with the pu'ula sachir with you until the morning. The pasuk continues in Sefer Devarim, biyomo titein scharo. So this is a positive commandment. And the sun shouldn't set. Because the worker, the poor worker, and he turns his soul towards you. So chas v'shalom, he shouldn't call out to Hashem in resentment that he's walking away from a job well done, empty-handed. And that would be considered a sin. So the pasuk, in very strong terms, discusses that there's a negative commandment against not paying the worker on time, and there's also a positive commandment. We fulfill a positive mitzvah when we do pay the worker on time. So it's not just that it's an avera if we don't. We actually get a positive commandment if we do. The pasuk says, "Biyomo titein tscharo." The Gemara explains what these psukim are saying. So the Gemara tells us in Baba Metzia, on Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis, that the pasuk in Vayikra, where the pasuk says you're not allowed to have the wages stay with you overnight, you have to pay him on time, that's talking about a worker who worked all day until the night. So then the balabayis has the entire night to come up with the wages to pay the worker. He worked all day for you, you have the whole night, you have the next tekufa, the next ona, you have the next period of the day to come up with the wages and pay. That's why the pasuk says you can't hold on to the money all night. It shouldn't go overnight, because we're talking about someone where the payment is due that night. The pasuk in Devarim is where the pasuk says the sun shouldn't set on you. That's talking about a night worker where he was working all night. So then the halacha is you have all the day to come up with the money to pay the worker. The balabayas has the entire day to pay. And if he passes the day, if he misses the expiration, so not only did he violate the negative commandment, he also did not fulfill the positive commandment of biyomo titein tscharo. So we have two scenarios. We have a scenario where the payment is due at night because the worker has been working all day. You're not allowed to hold on to the money until the morning. There's a negative commandment against not paying him sometime that night. And likewise, if the worker was working all night and now the payment is due during the day, you have the entire day to come up with the money, and you have a positive commandment to pay him on time, and the violation would occur when the sun sets. It's interesting because we know that people have various opinions when Tzeis HaKochavim is, when Shabbos is over, when the fast day is over. Some people wait 40 minutes, 50 minutes, 72 minutes. I saw an opinion brought that since the Pasuk says, Lo Tovei Olav Shemesh, that the sun shouldn't set, this is not Tali in Rabbeinu Tam. A person can't say, well, I hold like Rabbeinu Tam, so I have another 72 minutes to pay it. Because it's not effective at the Tzeis HaKochavim when the stars come out. The payment is due before the sun sets. So it's very interesting that this might be Tali, this is an idea that the Poskim have. It might be dependent on Shkia, on sunset, rather than when the stars come out. So a person can't be extra machmir, so to speak. I'm saying that he can tongue-in-cheek. A person shouldn't be extra machmir and go for the 72. A person would have to pay by the sundown. That's an interesting halacha that I saw mentioned by some of the Poskim, because they're medayik the Pasuk that you have to pay before the sun sets. The Mishnah says that not only does this halacha apply to a daily worker, this halacha also applies to someone who is contracted for the week, or it applies for somebody who's being paid by the month. So that's an interesting... So someone just asked me the question if there's a punishment. So the halacha would be that you would not receive lashes for violating the negative commandment here, because it's like it's nitik la'aseh, because it's you have to pay. You still have to pay even if you miss the date. So therefore, since it's rectified by the paying, you don't receive lashes. That's a klal that we have in the Gemara. That's a good question. Now, the Mishnah says that not only does this halacha apply to a daily worker, it applies to someone who's contracted by the month or by the week, so or even by the year. Let's say it's that you hired someone for the year, and the understanding is that it's one long contract, and he's not going to be paid until the year is over. So we know the halacha that ein tzchiras mishtalemes ela lebesof, that when you're paying a worker, the payment is not due until the end of the job. So dependent on how the job was divided up, sometimes it's divided up by the week, that the job is considered, the contract is considered complete, the payment is due at the end of the week. Sometimes a person is paid biweekly, monthly. So when the agreement is that that's one segment of the job, then the payment is due, and then the person would be subject now to these mitzvahs. So for example, if I hire someone for the month, if the person expects to be paid every month, so then as soon as the month is over and the payment is due, then I would be subject to the halacha that I have to pay him by the end of that day or the end of that night, depending on when the job officially ended of that month or that week or that day. The Gemara has a very interesting halacha. This is item Dalit. We're laying the groundwork. We're saying over the halachas that once you pass the morning, let's say, for example, the job was an all-day job, and I had the entire night to pay the worker. So I have the mitzvah and I have the avera not to delay, not to let the payment expire. Once I miss the time, if the sun does set on the job, or I went overnight with the money, so then once I blew it, I blew it. In other words, I violated the avera was done, and now it's just a rabbinic commandment to pay, obviously, as soon as you can, but you're not consistently violating the avera. It's a one-time thing. You have to pay him on time before the deadline. Once you miss the deadline, you miss the deadline, and you already got the violation. You can't really undo that. Now it's just a question of paying naturally because you owe the money, and you have to pay the money as soon as possible, but the avera was already done. Once you pass the time, then the time is passed. And we're going to soon see that this is a very relevant halacha here. Okay, so far, the money is due when the job is done. If the job is done all day long until the night, you have the entire night. If the job was done overnight, imagine an overnight watchman or something like that, then you have the entire next day to pay, and you can't let the sun set or you can't let it go overnight without paying. And this applies equally to a monthly or a weekly job as well. Now, in item Hay, the Achronim, the Mefarshim, have a very gishmak hakir. They have a very interesting analysis of this mitzvah. What exactly is the nature of this mitzvah? And we're going to go through, as we go through some of the ideas of the sugya, of the topic, we'll see how these different ways of looking at the mitzvah play out and could have real ramifications on the difference of how we look at this mitzvah. So the Achronim ask, this positive commandment to pay on time and the negative commandment against missing the expiration date of when you're supposed to pay, is this considered primarily dinei mamonis? Is this considered primarily a monetary rule? In other words, perhaps the way to look at this mitzvah, a way to understand this mitzvah, is that the Torah established for us that when you owe your worker money, it's like a contractual agreement to pay him by a certain time. And if you miss that time, you violated the contract, and the Avera, or the positive commandment, were put into place to enforce this contractual agreement. It's as if the Torah is teaching us that when you hire a worker, you're obligating yourself monetarily to pay him on time. So an example of a monetary mitzvah is, for example, returning a lost object. Returning a lost object is completely a monetary mitzvah. So because it's a monetary mitzvah, we take money into consideration. For example, if I have to return your lost object, let's say it's going to cost me money, I'm going to have to take off a day of work in order to busy myself to return the lost object. So why is your money more important to you than my money is to myself? It's a monetary mitzvah. Because it's a monetary mitzvah, so we take monetary factors into consideration. It's a monetary mitzvah. It's like the Torah obligates me to care about your money, but naturally, my money is not more important to you than your money, or vice versa. So that's why the Gemara tells us that if it's going to cost me money to return your object, I'm entitled to be compensated for that. Or if it's going to cost me more than it's going to cost you, if I take off to return the object, it's going to cost me more than it's going to cost you, the loss of the item, so then it wouldn't really make sense for me to have to lose a day's work to return your object. Another example, if we have a zaken, the eino lefi kvodo, if you have a very prominent person and it would be embarrassing for him, he wouldn't go through the streets carrying a basketball, even if had it been his own basketball. So you can't expect the person to lower himself or compromise his dignity to carry your basketball through the street, because he's not required to care more about your money than he would about his own money. Now, all of these kinds of considerations are only factored in when it's a monetary mitzvah, when it's about money. If it's about money, then we take other things into consideration, because money, after all, money is not the most important thing in the world. There are other considerations that also play in. So one way to understand this mitzvah is that it's a monetary mitzvah. When I hire a worker, so the Torah is teaching us that the proper way to go about this is it's almost like a contractual agreement that you have to pay the worker on time. I'm hiring you for $100. Part of that is that I have to pay the $100 by a certain time. It's completely a monetary way of looking at the mitzvah. That's one way of looking at the mitzvah, that it's primarily dinei mamonis. It's considered to be a monetary mitzvah. The other way to look at this mitzvah is that it's midin iser, that it's not a monetary mitzvah. It's like iser v'heter. It's a mitzvah because I have a mitzvah to pay you on time. It's not that it's a monetary source. It's not a right that you have to be paid on time. It's a mitzvah. It's like putting on tefillin. It's a ritual mitzvah. It's a dinei iser. It's the right thing to do intrinsically. If I hire someone, I have to pay the worker on time. It's not dinei mamonis. It's not a contractual agreement. It's dinei iser. It's a mitzvah. It's a ritual mitzvah that this is how Hashem wants us to return to pay the worker for the mitzvah. Now, I can give other examples. Let's say, for example, the prohibition against charging interest. If I lend you money, so I'm not allowed to charge interest. So these halachas of interest are not brought in Choshen Mishpat. They're not brought under monetary law. They're brought in Yoredeya. They're brought in the same section of Shulchan Aruch that discusses what you're allowed to eat, what you're not allowed to eat. It discusses Hilchas Nida. It discusses Hilchas cashiering your utensils. Ribis is not a monetary prohibition. The money was lent, and the interest is being paid by two consensual adults. We both agree that if I'm lending you money and you want to pay interest for the loan, it wouldn't be a monetary, you're agreeing to it, or we're entering this agreement both willingly. Ribis is not a monetary mitzvah. Ribis is a prohibition. It's something that Hashem does not want us to do, whether the two parties like it or not. The Rambam, the Mefarshim discuss, if after I pay you interest for a loan illegally, am I allowed to be moichel? Am I allowed to waive the returning of the interest? Or what if I say, it's okay, I'm willing to pay the interest. Hashem gave a mitzvah to protect me, but I'm willing to pay the interest. No, sir, because the prohibition against paying interest is not a monetary mitzvah. It's not subject for the two parties to waive. It's even forbidden for the borrower to pay the interest. It's nothing to do with the money. It's not because you're causing me a loss. It's not because you're cheating me. I'm willing to pay the interest. It's a prohibition. Another example of that, let's say, the Gemara discusses, let's say a person, a non-Kohen, eats truma. He eats truma. He wasn't allowed to eat truma. He ate truma by accident. So the Torah says that you have to reimburse the Kohen with the keren, with the principal, and also with an additional fifth. So you're paying keren v'choymish for having eaten, for a non-Kohen to eat the truma, b'shoigeg, to eat the truma by mistake. He didn't realize it was truma. So Tosfos says in Psachim, for those that are learning Daf Yomi, Tosfos says in Psachim, a very interesting halacha, that the Kohen is not allowed to be moichel. He can't waive, he can't say, you know what, it's okay, don't bother paying me back for the truma. He's not allowed to say that, because the reason why I have to pay the keren and the choymish for having eaten the truma is to achieve an atonement. It's not only a monetary compensation, it's also midinei iser. It's a ritual payment in order to achieve atonement. So we sometimes have mitzvahs that on the surface are not readily apparent what they are. Charging interest. Is that because when you charge interest, it's as if you're stealing, and when I pay the money, I don't want to pay? So the Poskim say, no, it's not a monetary prohibition. It's a yoredeya prohibition. It's a ritual prohibition. It's like not eating treif. You're not allowed to eat treif. You're not allowed to pay interest. It's like arayas, forbidden relationships. It's not because one person is hurting the other. Even if both parties agree, you're not allowed to have such a relationship. It's as if you're eating something not kosher. It's not up to the parties to forgive or to waive. It's a yoredeya. It's a ritual prohibition. The other way to look at the mitzvah is that it's a monetary mitzvah, like returning a lost object. It's subject to all the laws of money, and all the considerations of money play a role because it's a monetary mitzvah. So that's the question in the Poskim. If paying the workers on time is a monetary mitzvah, is it simply a bolstered obligation? It's like a contractual agreement. Or do we look at it as if it's a ritual mitzvah, midinei iser, things that we have to do? You have to put on tefillin, you have to eat kosher, you have to pay your workers on time. How do we look at this mitzvah? So let's go through some more of the halachas, and in bearing this chakira in mind, let's look and see how the halacha plays out. So there's a very interesting gemara in Daf Kuf Yud Alef. Until now we were talking about a worker who works the entire day into the night. You have a whole night to pay. He works the entire night into the day. You have the entire day to pay. The Gemara talks about, what about our situation? In our situation, you don't have a worker who's working all night. You don't have a worker who's working literally from daybreak until Shkio and Tetzese Gachavim. We work from 9 to 5. You have the rest of the day. When does the mitzvah kick in? When is the deadline that you have to pay by? So there's actually a machlekes about that. The Gemara says, on Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph and Bab Metzia, Omar Rav, this is item Vav, a schir shoitz. If you're working for a few hours, which is like our case, you're not working the entire day, a 12-hour day. You're working part of the day, and the rest of the day, you finish the job. If you're working during the day and your job is over during the day, then the employer has only till the rest of the day to pay. If you're working a few hours at night, so then the employer has the rest of the night, and he has to pay you by the end of the night. That's Rav's opinion. So it's not just that if I work the whole day, you have the whole night. If I work part of the day, then you only have the remainder of the day to be considered that you paid me on time. Or if I work part of the night, you have the remainder of the night to be considered that you paid me on time. That's the opinion. That's the opinion of Rav. Shmuel says that a schir shois of the day, you collect the entire day, like we said. But if you're working a few hours into the night, then the employer has the remainder of the night and the entire next day to pay. And the Gemara goes on to say that this is actually a machlokes tanoim. Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rav, that if you work partially during the day, you have the remainder of the day to pay. If you work partially during the night, you have the remainder of the night. Rav Shimon, the Tana, Rav Shimon holds like Shmuel, that if you worked partly into the night, you have the remainder of the night and the entire next day to pay. So the question is, how do we paskin? Basically, the question boils down, if you worked part of the night, does the employer have just the remainder of the night to pay, or does he have the remainder of the night together with the entire next day? So the Rush comes along and says something very interesting. First, he quotes the Rif. He says, we paskin like Rav, that if you work part of the night, you must be paid before the end of that night. Why? The kaimalon halacha karav the iser. Because when it comes to iser veheter, we paskin like Rav. So the Rush explains in Bechiris, it's very interesting, that Shmuel, his expertise was dinei mamonis. His expertise was in monetary law. Rav's expertise was in dinei iser. So by and large, more often than not, when Rav and Shmuel argue regarding mamonis, money matters, we paskin like Shmuel. When Rav and Shmuel argue regarding iser veheter, then we rule like Rav. So comes along the Rush in the name of the Rif and says, this is an iser veheter question. This is a question of iser veheter. This is a question of ritual law. And therefore, we're going to paskin like Rav, that if he's working part of the night, you have to pay him by the end of the night. You don't have the next day. Because this is an example of ritual law. The Rush says clearly that it's a ritual law. Then the Rush continues and said, Va'od, furthermore, because the argument between Rav and Shmuel translates into a machlekes tanoim of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and the Gemara in Erevin says that whenever Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon argue, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that's another reason to paskin like Rav, because we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. So if we look carefully, and this is item Zion on the notes, it's going to come out that the first reason of the Rush, who says that the reason to paskin like Rav is because it's midinei iser, and this is brought by the Rif, by the way, he obviously holds that the mitzvah, the nature of the mitzvah to pay the worker on time, the nature of the mitzvah is rooted in iser veheter. It's a ritual halacha. It's not a monetary contractual agreement. It's a ritual halacha. It's a mitzvah. It's like putting on tefillin. It's not subject for the parties to waive. It's a ritual halacha. That's according to the first reason of the Rush. However, the second reason of the Rush, that we simply paskin like Rav, because whenever Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon argue, we paskin like Reb Yehuda, the second reason of the Rush would lend itself to say that it's a monetary halacha. Although we should normally paskin like Shmuel when it comes to monetary law, money matters, but in this case we paskin like Rav because Reb Yehuda, the Tana, who we always paskin like, sides with Rav. According to the second reason, the Rush would seem to imply that ordinarily we would have paskin like Shmuel. So it's interesting because seemingly an innocent statement of the Rush, two reasons why we paskin like Rav in this particular halacha, would actually reflect these two ways of looking at the mitzvah. Is it a ritual mitzvah or is it a monetary mitzvah? That's the two reasons of the Rush. Now, there's a fascinating Gemara in Bab Metzia, Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. Omer Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says, "Afilu loy sachru el libzu loy eshkol echad shalanav." Even if you hired a worker to simply harvest one cluster of grapes, you know, maybe the grapes are growing high up on the vine. Maybe you have an apple tree that's very high up. So you go ahead and you hire someone. You hire the teenager next door. Would you mind getting a ladder and climbing up and picking some apples for me. The whole job takes about 5 minutes. Or you hire someone to cut one cluster of grapes off the tree. For some reason, you can't do it yourself. You hire a worker. So Rav Ashi says, even if you hired him for such a simple thing, you're subject to this halacha of paying the worker on time. So the question is, what does Rav Ashi mean to say? Even if you only hired him to cut one cluster of grapes, why should this be different? What is Rav Ashi teaching us? So Rashi says that Rav Ashi is simply giving an example of a schir shois. He's simply giving an example of someone who's not working the entire day. He's only working part of the day. In the example that Rav Ashi said, he was only working for a few moments, but that's not the point. That's not the thrust of what Rav Ashi is saying. Rav Ashi is simply reiterating the halacha that if you hire someone for a part of the day, you must pay him by the end of the day. That's all Rav Ashi is saying. However, the Ritva and the Meiri say that Rav Ashi is telling us a tremendous chiddush. He's telling us, even if you only hired him for such a simple thing, to harvest one cluster of grapes or a couple of apples, where you don't even owe him a shavah pruta, this is what the Ritva and the Meiri say, you don't even owe him a minimal amount of money, you owe him a few pennies, right? He agreed to do it for a few pennies, for a nickel, for a dime. It wasn't a shavah pruta. It's not even something that has recourse. If I would steal, that was the sin of the Dor HaMabul, that people used to steal less than a pruta, and there was no recourse. A bezdin wouldn't bother to convene over a shavah pruta. There's not even any recourse. You can't even extract. If you would go to a bezdin and file a small claims court of less than a pruta, the bezdin would laugh you out of the bezdin. They wouldn't even bother. It's not worth anybody's time to sit over less than a pruta. Nevertheless, says Rav Ashi, that if you hire a worker and you owe him less than a pruta, he agreed to work for, let's say, a quarter or a dime, whatever a pruta, I think they used to say a pruta was something around the dollar. So you're not even paying him that, you're paying him less than the minimum wage, you're paying him basically peanuts. Nevertheless, Rav Ashi says that you're subject to this mitzvah of paying on time. That's what the Ritva and the Meiri say. Now, this is an amount of money, such a minimal, insignificant amount of money that there wouldn't even be recourse in a bezdin. Nevertheless, there's a mitzvah to pay on time. And the Meiri actually says, this is at the end of item Ches on the first page, quote, as hara, this is a warning, this is a mitzvah, shebeschiris eina tluya b'mamen. Because paying the worker is not a monetary issue, ela af bepachas mishavah pruta, even less than the minimal amount of money, you're in violation, afilo loy sachro ela livser eshkol echad, oivre mishum baltalin, you will be in violation of holding the money overnight, not paying the worker on time, even though it's an amount of money that there's not even any recourse in a bezdin. Clearly, the Meiri holds that the mitzvah to pay the worker on time is not a contractual agreement, because money matters, money laws, money halachas would not require you to pay the money on time. There wouldn't even be really a recourse in Bezdin. It's completely a ritual mitzvah. Once you agree to pay the worker for a job, you have a mitzvah to pay him on time, even if it's not the normal amount of money that we would normally have hilchas mamon. For example, going back to our analogy of finding a lost object, if you find something that's worth less than a pruta, there's no mitzvah to return the object. It's not considered money. If a person steals less than a pruta, it's a question if he even violated the avera of loy sigzel. It's not considered money. Nevertheless, if you agreed to pay, if you agreed upon a fee that's less than the normal standard of money, nevertheless, says the Meiri, you have to pay the worker on time because it's a ritual mitzvah. It's midine iser, says the Meiri. It's not based on money. So clearly we have a question here, if the mitzvah to pay the worker on time is a monetary mitzvah or is it a ritual mitzvah? And this is already one nafkamina, one difference. Would the halacha apply on less than a pruta? That would be the machlekes. Now, there's another gemara, a fascinating gemara, and we're learning the halachas along the way as we go on. This is item Yud. The Gemara says a fascinating halacha. Tanu Rabbanan, we learn in a brisa. Ha'imer l'chaveiroi. If you say to your friend, say, sachar li poyalim, if you have an agent, if you have a middleman who's actually hiring, imagine if you're the owner of a big company and you have people working under you who are doing the hiring. So very often, you know, if you're working for Amazon, so the people, the driver or the guy working in the warehouse, he never saw the owner of the company at all. Who's he working for? Who does he report to? He's reporting for a middleman. He's reporting for a manager. The manager himself is not personally responsible to pay the worker. He's not the one who hired the worker. It's not his work. He's just an agent to hire the worker on behalf of the company. So says the Gemara that if you say to your friend, hire someone for me, ein oivri mishol baltalin. So the employer, because the employer did not hire the worker directly, because the employer hired the worker through a middleman, and the worker knew that, the worker knew that he's not working for the middleman. It was very clear that someone is hiring someone else to work for me, but he never, I'm not the one who offered the person the job in the first place. You're not subject to the Isser of Bal Talin. It's a fascinating halacha. The Gemara speaks out.
A Jewish employer can utilize like an employment agency, like a manpower company.
That's right. He can. It's basically like a shelter. It's a shelter. It's a shelter. It's like a corporation that you have a protection here, a buffer between you and the worker. I'm not the one who hired you. I have a hiring committee that hired you, and I never made up with you directly, even though everyone knows that you're working for me, but I got someone else to hire you. Therefore, you're not subject to the whole Aveira of Bal Talin. It's a fascinating mitzvah. It's a Farish of Bryce. It's brought in Shulchan Aruch. And the Gemara says, Zelafish ain't such loy sachron. I didn't hire you. The Zelafish ain't put lasayetzle. And the manager is not liable either because it's not his work. You're not working for him. It's a way, it's a loophole. It's a way of avoiding the whole halacha. Rashi says, like Karina and Sachar Gabe, you're not considered.
Is this only a part-time worker you're talking about?
This applies to any worker. Any worker, if you didn't hire the worker directly, there's no mitzvah to pay the worker on time, right? Because I mean, obviously you have to pay him on time. You're not subject to these prohibitions, I should say.
Correct. But if you pay him, then you also give him benefits.
Right.
Is it then everything becomes your chiyuv?
That's a good question. So let's say the manager, right? The manager is authorized to hire the workers on behalf of the company and to give benefits to the employees. But he's not the one, they're not working for him. They're not. It's not his job. He himself is an employee. He's just working. He's working for the major, for the boss, the big boss of the company. So I'm not. Let's say I'm a manager in a company. Let's say I'm working in a supermarket and I'm hiring a boy to work in the aisle of the supermarket. It's not my store. I'm not the one who's making the money. I'm just the manager, and I'm hiring somebody to work for the owner of the store. So the Gemara says I'm not subject to the prohibition, and the owner is not subject to the prohibition of Bal Talin. And the Gemara actually says, and this is in item Yud, that Rabbi Yehuda Bar Mareimar and Mar Zutra would hire workers for one another. Whenever Rabbi Yehuda Bar Mareimar had to hire someone, Mar Zutra would do it for him, and vice versa. Whenever Mar Zutra had to hire someone, imagine if Mar Zutra had to hire someone to mow his lawn, so he would get Rabbi Yehuda Bar Mareimar to do the hiring, and that way Mar Zutra would not be subject to the Aver. Kadei Shele Ya'avru, in order that they should avoid the prohibition. Not that they plan on double-crossing the worker, Chas Shalom. Let's not misunderstand. They're not planning on not paying the worker. They plan on paying the worker, and ethically, they want to pay the worker on time as well. But they don't want to be subject. They don't want to, Chas Shalom, have a possibility, a potential of violating this halacha. I don't think that they were trying to find a way to not have to pay on time. They still ethically and morally have to pay on time, but they wanted to avoid the prohibition lest they over budgeted and they're afraid to be in violation. Now the obvious question is, what kind of halacha is this? Don't we have a rule that shlucho shel adam kemoso? If I'm an agent working for an owner and I'm authorized to hire on behalf of the owner, so I am the owner's shliach. I'm the employer's shliach. I'm a messenger. I'm an agent to hire the workers. So since when do we say that he has to do the hiring personally in order to be subject to this prohibition? If I'm a middleman and I was authorized to hire on your behalf, so I am your shliach, I'm your agent, so why shouldn't you be subject to this prohibition? So this is something that the Rishonim, the great Rishonim, struggle with. The Ritva says that he doesn't have a great understanding in this halacha, but the Ritva says that we see from here the loy matzinu shliach l'chiyuvo. Since the mitzvah of paying the worker on time is is a mitzvah. It's an aveira to not pay, and it's a mitzvah to pay. Such a mitzvah or such an aveira cannot be activated through an agent. I can acquire something through an agent. I can obligate myself through an agent. But an agent cannot. There's no agency. There's no concept of shlicha. Says the Ritva. He's struggling with this. He's saying that's what you seem to see from this Gemara, that an agent does not have the right to create a mitzvah for me. You know where you have this? You have something similar. It's a far-fetched analogy.
Why don't we just say,
that's right. So I was just going to say that. I was just going to say it's a far-fetched analogy. So Reb Ezra, usually means that if I send the shliach off to do an aveira, then the aveira, the liability, doesn't devolve onto me. It devolves onto the shliach. If I send you off to murder someone, so you're the one who's going to be liable for that, not me. That's normally what it means. Hiring a worker is not an aveira. Hiring a worker triggers certain responsibilities. So why shouldn't, if I dispatch you to hire a worker, why shouldn't that trigger certain responsibilities on my behalf? So this is something that the Ritva struggles with. And he says, since it's a mitzvah, so apparently a shliach can't trigger a mitzvah for me. I can only trigger the mitzvah for myself. That's what the Ritva says. And it's Dvar Mechudashim. It's a novel concept that the Ritva says. The Tosfos Rid there in Bava Metzia gives more of like a practical, understandable answer. He says something practical. He says, because the worker never met face to face with the employer, since the worker knows that there's like a buffer between him and the employer, and there's sort of like red tape in between, and the fact that the employer hired me through an agent, and I never made up with the employer directly, therefore there's no smichus das. It's almost as if the worker doesn't expect to get paid on time because he's not dealing directly with the worker. Who does he report to? He reports to a middleman, and it's not the middleman's responsibility to pay. So it's almost as if he's allowing himself to be hired with the understanding that it might take some time before he's paid. So, you know, nowadays we have a system, if you get hired by a big company, you know, the money gets deposited into your bank account. Nobody expects, and we would complain if the money's not deposited on time whenever it was made up. But the Gemara is telling us that you're not subject to the violation because you know that there's a system in place and there's a buffer, so to speak. You don't directly report to the employer, and therefore the employer is not obligated. He doesn't have, there's a certain distance between him and the employee. He doesn't have the obligation per se to pay on time. So the Ritva, he basically creates a new concept that a shliach cannot activate mitzvahs on your behalf. And the Tosfos Rid says more of a monetary consideration, that the worker himself almost doesn't expect to get paid on time because he never had direct dealings with the employer. So it could be that the Ritva and the Tosfos Rid are following these two lines of how to understand the mitzvah. Remember that the Ritva was the one who said that the mitzvah applies even to less than a pruta. It's not a monetary mitzvah at all. And the Meiri, who said the same thing, clearly said that it's not a monetary mitzvah. It's a ritual mitzvah. It's medine iser v'heter to pay the owner on time. So as not understandable as it is, when the Ritva says that a shliach cannot trigger this mitzvah, it's consistent with the Ritva's way of looking at the mitzvah. It's not a contractual agreement. If it would be a contractual agreement, so to the extent that the agent has the right to hire, whatever the privileges and benefits, like Reb Tobi, like you said, whatever the benefits to the worker are, that should all be included in the contract. If you look at the mitzvah to pay on time as a contractual agreement, so what does that mean that a shliach can't trigger the mitzvah? It's not a mitzvah, it's part of the contract. Why wouldn't the agent be able to trigger that mitzvah? So what the Ritva says, that an agent, the shliach, cannot trigger the mitzvah, that's consistent with the Ritva's understanding that it's not a contractual monetary agreement, it's more of an iser v'heter, it's more of a ritual halacha, and in that light, the Ritva could get away with saying that a shliach can't trigger such a mitzvah on behalf of the employer. However, the Tosfos Rid apparently understood that this is simply a monetary mitzvah, and therefore there's no reason in the world why the employee should not be entitled to the benefit of being paid on time just because he was hired through an agent. if the agent has the right to hire, so he should have the full benefit. That's why the Tosfos Rid says a monetary consideration, because the worker himself, because he agreed to the job and never had direct dealing with the employer, it's almost as if he doesn't expect to be paid on time, because there's a whole process in place, there's a chain of command, so to speak, and he's not directly dealing with the employer, so the Tosfos Rid is able to explain it more on an easier way. But if it's an Isser v'Heter, then we explain it the Ritva's way. That's what the Machlekes Ritva and Tosfos Rid might be consistent.
Yeah, the Tosfos Rid's answer, I'm sorry for interrupting, is very contractual in nature. We talk about
exactly.
Secular law, reliance.
Uh-huh.
You need reliance in order to create an obligation.
That's very good. So it's almost as if you agreed to work for the employer without even having met the employer, so to speak, without having spoken directly to the employer, so you don't have that reliance on the employer. It never ceases to amaze me how the sugyas and the rishonim and the gemaras take all of these ideas into consideration, and it's all there in the gemara. Now the shach. So this might be another nafgamina, another difference in the way of understanding the mitzvah, namely how to understand this halacha. So we have the basic halacha of paying on time. If you hire someone, you have to pay him by the end of the day. But if you didn't hire him directly, the mitzvah doesn't apply. And we have different understandings behind that halacha. There's a shach in Simen Shin Lamed Tes in Choshe Mishpat 339. This is where the halachas are brought of paying the worker on time. He brings from the Sefer Chassidim a similar halacha to what we just said, that his example happens to be that you contracted a sofer to write something for you. Either he's writing a Sefer Torah or he's writing a document. In those days, not everyone knew how to write on their own. So you hired a scribe to write something for you, to write something for you. So the Sefer Chassidim recommends, Tisna Imo, this is item Yud Beis, you should stipulate with the worker ahead of time. He happens to be discussing a scribe, but the halacha would apply to any worker. You should stipulate ahead of time, Shaloi Tiyeb Bal Talin Pula Sacher, that you don't want to be subject to the Avera of paying on time. Of course, I plan to pay you on time, and I have a mitzvah to pay you on time, but agree, when I'm hiring you, the Sefer Chassidim recommends that I should stipulate, do me a favor, waive your rights to be paid on time, because I don't want to be nichshal, I don't want to get the avera of not paying on time. So says the Sefer Chassidim, Shema Keshi Yitba, because maybe when he's toiveya, maybe when the worker asks for the money or expects the money, that's the halacha, by the way, that you're only over baltalin if the worker expects the money or asks for the money. If he's not really so, if he's not running after the money, he didn't come to ask, then you're not in violation. So even if you ask me for the money, I don't want to be in violation. Lo yeh lochalite, maybe I won't have the money to pay. Which again, actually, if you don't have the money to pay, you're not in violation. So the Sefer Chassidim means that you don't have enough money. It's going to be tight. You can cough up the money. You'll come up with the money, but it's a little tight. Maybe the job cost a little more than you expected. You don't want to have to pay. You want some more time. You want to finance. So says the Sefer Chassidim, you should stipulate ahead of time that he should waive, even if he wants the money, that you shouldn't be in violation of Bal Talin. That's what the Sefer Chassidim says. Now, the Sefer Chassidim himself goes on to explain, even though you stipulated, of course, he says, you should pay on time if you're able to. Says the Sefer Chassidim, we have a principle that you're ordinarily not allowed to stipulate against what it says in the Torah. So, for example, if the classic example is that the Gemara says a man marries a woman. Now, we know that when a man marries a woman, so he has three obligations, three marital obligations to his wife. Number one, he has an obligation to feed his wife. Number two, he has an obligation to clothe his wife. And number three, he has an obligation of intimacy, of a relationship with his wife. So says the Gemara, imagine if a man would marry a woman and say, and stipulate, I want to marry you, but I don't want to have the monetary obligation of supporting you, right? Maybe you're independently wealthy. I don't want to have the obligation to have to support you. Or maybe you'll find a job. You can be responsible for your own support. And she agrees to that. Or let's say a man marries a woman and says, I want to marry you, but I don't want to have the obligation, the marital obligation of intimacy. I don't want to be in violation. And she accepts that. So the Gemara says, when it comes to the monetary commitments, like feeding and clothing, that's up to her to waive. But when it comes to the iser v'heter, when it comes to the obligations, the marital obligations that are not monetary in nature, that she can't waive. And it's binding, even if she agrees initially to waive those requirements. But masne al masha kasav b'Torah, you're not allowed to make a stipulation against what it says in the Torah. So when it comes to monetary law, a person could make a condition if the party accepts it, it's chal, it's effective. But when it comes to issa b'heter, not. The Sefer Hasidim himself says that this is not subject to the clause of making an illegal condition against what it says in the Torah, because just like you can stipulate with your worker that you're not going to feed them, in those days it was customary that the employer would feed the worker, so too you can make a stipulation not to pay on time. So it would seem that the Sefer Hasidim is comparing the halachas of paying on time to monetary commitments. It's a contractual agreement. And therefore, he says, just like you can stipulate regarding other monetary obligations, you can also stipulate to not to have to pay on time. It would depend on this. But if it's considered iser v'heter, then it wouldn't be so simple that you're allowed to stipulate on time. And in fact, the Chafetz Chaim, in his Sefer Avas Chesed, this is item Yud Gimel, he actually asks on the Sefer Hasidim, how can you compare stipulating against the custom of feeding the workers to stipulating against the mitzvah of paying the worker on time? Feeding the workers is a custom. Of course you can stipulate, you can agree not to be bound by that. But paying the workers on time, which is a mitzvah, maybe in fact you can't stipulate against that. So the Shach brings the Sefer Hasidim, but the Chafetz Chaim says that it's not so simple, and the proof that the Sefer Hasidim brings that you can stipulate against giving them lunch, you know, you stipulate to your worker that you're not going to put up a coffee machine over there, or you're not going to put up a snack machine, you know, the pretzels or potato chips. So just because you can stipulate not to have a vending machine in the office doesn't necessarily mean that you can stipulate against paying them on time. So the Chafetz Chaim actually asks that on the Sefer Hasidim. Seemingly, this would depend on the nature of the mitzvah. There's a fascinating Gemara in Bav Metzia, on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, Omar Rabba Barav Huna, Hani Shukoi. If you have Shukoi, you have people that they earn their money on the market day. Loi Avri Mishum Bal Tolin. Imagine if I make my money on the market day. Everybody knows, you know, you have an accountant, or he makes his money during the tax season. That's when people sign up. Or some other example where the money comes in a seasonal kind of a way. You're a store owner, and the busy time of the year is the holiday season, whatever it is. So you have a worker working in the store, and everybody knows that the employer, the store owner, is not going to have the money to pay the worker until the busy season, because that's when the money rolls in. So says the Gemara that if the worker knows that the merchant gets the money on the market day, so he's not subject to Bal Tullin, because the worker, when he's hired, he knows that the owner won't have money. So now Rashi says, even if he happens to have the money, he's not subject to paying on time, because the worker accepted the job based on that. Now there's a fascinating machloikis between Rashi and the Meiri again. The Meiri was the one who said that the prohibition applies even on less than a pruta, because it's a ritual mitzvah. There's a fascinating argument between Rashi and the Meiri what this Gemara is saying. According to Rashi, since the merchant is not expected to have money until the market day, so he's not subject to Bal Tullin at all. In the beginning of today's talk, we discussed the halacha that once you miss the time, once you miss the deadline, then there's no longer a consistent avera. You miss it, you miss it. So because I don't have to pay the worker when the worker completes the job, because it's not market day, so even when market day comes, I'm not subject to the prohibition. That's what Rashi says. Because essentially what you're doing is, when the worker agrees to work under those conditions that the owner doesn't have the money readily available right away, he's not subject to the prohibition at all. This would actually seem to imply, like the Sefer Hasidim, that it's almost as if the worker stipulated, accepted the risk of not being paid on time. However, the Meiri, so here comes the Meiri again, the Meiri says that no, What you're essentially doing here is you're postponing the payday. You're not telling the worker that although I owe you the money, I'm not going to pay you until market day. You're actually postponing the payday until the market day. Says the Me'iri that the Aveira will apply once the market day comes. That's what the Me'iri says. Once you have to pay him as soon as you can, and as soon as the market day comes, you will be subject to the violation. So according to Rashi, if you don't get the money until the market day, you're not subject to paying at all. Meaning, if the situation is clear that you don't have money now, you'll have money at a specific time. According to Rashi, the employer is not subject to the mitzvah at all because the worker agreed to work and not be paid when he finishes the job. According to the Me'iri, you are subject to the mitzvah when the market day comes. And it's very understandable because the Me'iri is consistent with his explanation. It's not a monetary mitzvah, it's a ritual mitzvah. So when the Gemara says you're not in violation right away, it's not because the worker waived the mitzvah, it's because we're simply postponing the payday. The payday was made up for the market day. Once the market day comes, then you'll be subject to the mitzvah. Now, the Gemara says, in item Tes Zayin, the Gemara says, we mentioned this before, that you're really only in violation if you have money to pay. If you don't have money to pay, you're not in violation. The Ritva says that if you have metalkalin, if you have objects at home that you plan on selling anyway or that you could easily sell, then you're actually obligated to sell those items to raise the money to pay the worker. These are kinds of scenarios where we're not so accustomed to that because we don't live in such a dachas. Baruch Hashem, we live in more affluent society. If you hire someone, you usually have like we talked about hiring a babysitter. Imagine if you hire a babysitter and you don't have cash on hand, so you go ahead and you sell your candlesticks in order to pay the babysitter. We don't live that way. But the Ritva says theoretically, if you don't have cash at hand, you would be responsible and obligated to sell household items or things that you could sell or that are oimid to sell. You should sell them in order to raise the money. And the Sefer HaChinuch says that you're even obligated to take a loss in order to pay the worker on time. You're selling things in a hurry. There's sort of like you're making a yard sale. You're going to be selling things below cost. Says the Sefer HaChinuch that you don't have to sell things if you're going to lose a lot of money. But you are required to take even a minimal loss in order to ensure that you pay the workers on time. Because it's an obligation to pay the workers on time. So I saw people ask that, what do you mean you're not required to take a tremendous loss? We have a principle that a person has to give away all his money not to violate a negative commandment. Let's say, for example, somebody would threaten, chas v'shalom, you have to eat not kosher, otherwise I'll take away your money. So that's not pikuach nefesh. You would have to give away all your money in order to avoid violating a negative commandment. You're not required to give away your life, of course, but you're required to give away your money. So how could the Sefer HaChinuch say that you're not required to take a substantial loss to pay the worker on time? What happened to the negative commandment of not paying on time? Don't you have to take even a tremendous loss to avoid violating a negative commandment? So we can understand the Sefer HaChinuch if it's a monetary... It's dinei mamonis. If it's dinei mamonis, if it's a monetary mitzvah, if we compare it to Hashavas Aveda, so on the one hand, it's a contractual agreement, so you have an obligation to pay the worker, and you would be required even to sell things for a little bit below cost, but you wouldn't be required to give away all your money, because why is his money more valuable than my money? It's a monetary mitzvah, so we would compare it to Hashavas Aveda. Some practical halachas, the Kshuvas V'Hanhagas, he brings a very interesting halacha. He says, nowadays the minhag is to pay the worker the next month. So let's say you're working for the month of February, so you wouldn't be paid until the first day of the next month. So the question is, what's happening when you're paying the next month? Why is it that you're allowed to push it off a day? So there are those who say that because that became the custom to not pay at the end of the month, but not until the next day. You pay January 1st. Why are you paying the first day of the next month? Why didn't you pay the last day of the previous month? So the minhag is that we pay the first day of the next month. So some want to say that this is like the market day case, where you're agreeing to not be paid on time and you're agreeing to be paid a day later. So there are those who argue that the employer would not be subject to the prohibition at all because it's already agreed upon that I'm not going to pay you on time. If, let's say, you work 4 weeks in the month and I pay you on the beginning, the first of the next month, that's when the paycheck is deposited. So why am I not paying you on time? You agreed to that. So some say you're not subject to the prohibition at all, just like the market day case, according to Rashi. Other people say no, that this is more to be understood like the Meiri's way of understanding it, that we're simply agreeing to postpone the payday. The official payday was postponed to the first day of the next month, and that would really be like the Meiri's understanding, and therefore the employer would be in violation for not paying the worker on the agreed upon day because you're simply postponing the payday. The Chafetz Chaim, and this is item your test, the Chafetz Chaim has a very interesting halacha that you should bedafka, you should specifically not pay the worker ahead of time. You should pay the worker on the day. Because since there's a positive mitzvah to pay the worker on the day, you want to get the mitzvah. Since the pasuk says, biyomo titein tscharo, pay him on the day that it's due. The payment is not due until the work is completed. So wait till it's completed when you have an obligation to pay, and then pay. That's what the Chafetz Chaim says. He looks at it as if the actual act of paying is the Maisa Mitzvah. Now, we've discussed these kinds of ideas before. We discussed this when we were dealing with building a mikah, building a fence around the roof. There's always the Chakira. What's the objective here? What's the Kavana Satorah? Is the Kavana Satorah that the act of paying is the Mitzvah? Or is the Kavana Satorah that he should be paid? Now, this is a question that comes up all the time. Not having Chametz on Pesach, is there a mitzvah in the act of destroying, or is the objective to the mitzvah simply to not have chametz? A lot of mitzvahs we can debate. If the maisa mitzvah, is it the act of building the fence that's the mitzvah, or is it the having the fence that's the mitzvah? So it's the same thing over here. Some people argue and say that no, the point is that the person should be paid on time. So if you gave him the money ahead of time, he's also paid on time. It's not the act of paying, it's the having of the money that he doesn't go by without being paid. But the Chafetz Chaim looked at it that there's actually a mitzvah to go through the motions of paying him on the day that the money is due. There's another question that comes up. We discussed this when we discussed going on strike. So we discussed a Rebbe. A Rebbe is officially not being paid for the act of teaching Torah because you're not allowed to take payment for teaching Torah. You have to teach for free. So really, he's being paid for schar b'teila. He's being paid for the fact that he's not doing a different job. So in a way, the salary is more of like a reimbursement. If you want to talk about it in terms of tax law, the way the halacha views a salary of a Rebbe is not so much a salary for the work, but it's almost like a reimbursement. So the poskim discuss, is there a mitzvah to pay on time? So the Chazon Ish and others say that although that's technically true, that we're reimbursing, but because the Rebbe has to teach certain subjects, he also has the status of a hired worker, and therefore the employer, whoever the employer is, would have an obligation to pay on time. The question would be now, who's doing the hiring and who's the employer? If you have the other halacha, that maybe the employer, I don't know who's considered the employer. Is it the board of directors? Is it the owner of the school? Is it the executive director? Who's the hirer and who's the employer? But assuming that it's a regular employer-employee relationship, he would be considered a sachir, he would be considered a worker, and he would be subject to the mitzvah of b'yoy moiti tein tzchare.
Okay. I can think of a charge that gets the board of directors off the hook. And that is, the Rebbe doesn't have any interaction.
Yeah. So you have the Gemara's teretz that there's a shliach in between, right? So that's what I'm alluding to. You have to know who's. So basically, the Paiskim say sometimes the one who's doing the hiring is considered achroi. Like sometimes the person doing the hiring, like I'll give you an example. Let's say Politz, like Mrs. Katz. No, Chas v'Shalom, nobody's firing me. Mrs. Katz is essentially the one who's taking the responsibility to pay, so she would be considered the employer. But sometimes you have the school where the executive director is simply a hired hand, and you're really working, so to speak, for not a clear employer. So that might be an example where there's nobody who's, it's like a corporation, there's nobody who's directly, personally responsible to pay the worker on time. All right, Yashika. But